This week, we are joined by Gen3 CEO Samson Mao for a conversation about accelerating global adoption of Bitcoin, strategic Bitcoin reserves, and a scenario he describes as the Omega Candle, which is a moment in time where the Bitcoin price increases by $100,000 or more in a single shot. I'm Scott Dietles. I'm the CEO and founder of Block Rewards, and part of our mission in bringing Bitcoin to the workplace is helping people understand how it will help them. Samson believes that Bitcoin adoption is moving much faster than most people realize, and today's conversation is full of interesting ideas about why. Hope you enjoy. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. We're joined this week by a very special guest, Samson Mao. Samson, thanks for coming to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Scott.
So you've been in Bitcoin for a very long time. I wanted to start the conversation today asking you, it's the end of 2024. We are sitting in a world where Bitcoin is kind of like nipping around this 100,000 mark. And it's focused on price, but you know, is Bitcoin where you thought it would be at the end of 2024? Or is there, you know, I guess so if you were thinking back to how you might have thought this would have gone 5 or 10 years ago, like, what are your thoughts on the state of it, of things today?
Right. So I would say overall, the time frame on which Bitcoin is accelerating on seems to be faster than I initially anticipated. So we've had a nation state attack of sorts with China clamping down on mining. And we've had a nation state, El Salvador, adopting Bitcoin. So in my view, these things would have happened, you know, maybe in a few years' time, but it's happened already. So I would say it's accelerating. In terms of price action, I think we're behind though. Like we're just hovering around almost 100K right now or 0.1M. And I think we should have been here already. Like I think this year we should have been well into the mid 500 range, 500K range, if not 1 million. And for that delay, I would largely say it's a holdover from all of the fallout from all the fraudulent activities that have been undertaken by and large, the crypto ecosystem. So we're sort of being punished for what they've done. And this is the result. Like Bitcoin price is muted. And even though a lot of people are euphoric right now that we're getting close to 100, I think we should have been well over 100 already. And I think we'll see it rapidly accelerate. So there's a saying that Bitcoin is like a beach ball being held underwater. And I think that's all the more true right now. Like even this moment as we're speaking, it is being held underwater by these forces still. So once it starts to rise up, it'll start to go up really fast. And most people won't expect what's about to come.
I couldn't agree more. You're one of the people who's more, you mentioned 0.1M and denominating the Bitcoin price instead of in dollars in percentages of million, this million price target. How do you best position the sort of a theoretical addressable market of Bitcoin, even just in the near term? Like for people who aren't following Bitcoin and they're excited about maybe 100K, and I'm kind of like getting texts from, you know, people who don't pay attention to this stuff asking me when I think it's going to happen. How do you position much larger numbers as being reasonable and even reasonable in the short term?
Well, I think for Bitcoin, we're not yet primed for bigger numbers. And this is why I started promoting the M notation or million notation. Like some people call it the Mo notation and some have called it like a Michael notation for Michael Saylor, but it's just the next logical step. So we're already talking about Bitcoin in terms of K, right? 1,000. It's not 100,000, it's 100K. So the logical extension is to go to M and then eventually, you know, B for billion. But there is no really an upper bound for where Bitcoin will go. I believe we're going to cross this threshold. You can call it the Veblen threshold or some threshold whereby we start to demonetize other large pools of existing assets like gold, real estate, and whatnot. And then it just accelerates from there upwards. So I think that sweet spot somewhere in the 400 to 600K range. And that's when we really start to take gold market cap away from that and move it to Bitcoin. So it's really just framing Bitcoin in a way that people can understand that there is a lot of growth potential still and to prepare them for $1 million Bitcoin and upwards, which I think some people can't see. They think, oh, well, it's grown so much. There's a diminishing return. That's a common one that people throw out there, but there is no such thing as diminishing returns when you're replacing an existing monetary system that is inferior. It just goes away and it dies. So it's not so much that I think we're going to be talking about multi-billion dollar Bitcoin. If you priced it in terms of fiat, yes. But I think once you cross the few million mark, maybe in the 5 million range, I think that's when people stop accepting fiat currencies and they just accept sats. And that just becomes the new norm. So you'll never actually get to the point where, you know, a Bitcoin is worth $1 trillion. We're going to switch completely off the fiat standard and onto the Bitcoin standard completely by that point. And I think the other part is people have grown accustomed to these large numbers when talking about things like GDP and debt, right? It's always in the billions and trillions. But most people don't really realize, especially normal people, that these numbers are absolutely ridiculous. Like, what is $1 trillion? Do you have any physical concept of how much money that is and how much physical space that would take up if you had physical bills printed for a few $1 trillion, right? Like, it's just insane how much money that is. But it's normalized, you know, like, okay, debt is up by $1 trillion this year. That's normal, right? So we just have to understand that Bitcoin will reprice everything. And yes, it will go up, but it's going to just be sats from now on. Like, we'll go back to more of a normal sounding price range for things. Like, you pay maybe 10 bucks a coffee right now. That's kind of ridiculous, right? And you might be paying 10, 15 bucks for a hamburger, but your grandparents paid 15 cents for a hamburger. So once we go back to that Bitcoin, once we go to that Bitcoin standard and we reprice to Satoshis, I think, you know, people will be earning 15 sats an hour at minimum wage, if there's still such thing as minimum wages, but everything will sound more normal and you'll have normal numbers once again.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more that, you know, there's lots of information about CPI and price indexing in during sound money periods that existed before CPI, and like the price of a bottle of Coke didn't change for like 85 years. And there is lots of optimism to be had around that. Maybe to come back to the first question I was asking around, is Bitcoin ahead or behind schedule? Like, what is your guess based on what you're seeing today of how long it takes for this next part of the transition? Like, do you think this is 10 years? Do you think it's 30 years?
I would say adoption is definitely ahead of schedule based on what I thought, you know, 10 years ago, but price is definitely lagging. So what happens when there is this differential there is that one thing will catch very rapidly up with the other. And I don't think adoption is slowing. Therefore, price is going to accelerate in growth. So I've always maintained a view that Bitcoin is exponential in nature, because adoption of technology is typically exponential. And money is even more foundational to civilization than, you know, basic things like a cell phone, right? So the adoption curve definitely should be approaching exponential. Now, exponential curves are very steep. So when you're predicting when it's going to happen, you know, you think it's a 5-10 years out, but because of that steepness of the curve, it's really difficult to say. Like, I think it's honestly going to be next year, at the most the next year after that. So within 2 years, we'll start seeing that very steep exponential curve. And it's just suddenly is very sudden, and people will start to see it.
Yeah, what an interesting experiment to watch. I have a follow-up question to that. So how would you characterize, you know, obviously people are entitled to their own estimates around how this thing will unfold, but there have been other notable people in the space who are happy to give their long-term price targets for Bitcoin in dollars in the year 2040 or 2050. And yeah, what are your thoughts around when we will just, I guess it's like, at what point is, if we're still thinking about Bitcoin in price of dollars and in some distant term of the future, like, will that mean maybe it didn't quite happen like we thought?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting one. There's kind of two schools of thought out there. I would say one school of thought is like aligned with what I'm saying, which is Bitcoin will replace the dollar. And it's going to happen very quickly. People aren't going to expect it. And everything just gets priced into sats or Bitcoin. The other school of thought is, I guess, more the Saylor school of thought, which seems to believe in a coexistence. And some people that I've seen react to my posts online are very, very aggressively leaning towards this and denying the possibility that the dollar goes away. And it's hard to see these things happening, but I believe when fiat currencies fail, they just spectacularly fail. There is no real grace period because nobody wants it anymore at certain points, right? If I told you, Scott, you know, I'll sell you 5,000 beaver pelts for dollars. Would you want the beaver pelts if you don't need them? Would you take them as money? Probably not, right? So inferior monies just kind of disappear over time and stop being money, and they become either ornamental or collectibles or anything like that. So it reverts back to, you know, a more proto money. And then the other part is, I guess, can the dollar fail? And I believe that is a part of this equation, because if you look at the debt right now, it's at 36 trillion, growing by a trillion a year. And that's going to accelerate because of the magic of compound interest. There's a school of thinking out there that the Department of Government Efficiency is going to fix this by cutting spending. But you can cut all the spending you want, but that debt is still going to compound at a remarkably fast rate. And compounding is a wonder of the world. So it's good if you're compounding positively, but if you're compounding debt, it's pretty bad. So the question really is, can the US get out of this debt spiral? At the same time, the world is sort of geopolitically moving away from the dollar, and you have countries adopting Bitcoin as money at the same time. So the interplay of these three things is really going to be the determining factor of whether or not the dollar continues. And I'm, again, in the camp that it's not going to last, and it's just going to change the Bitcoin very rapidly. But, you know, I could be wrong. Maybe Saylor is right, and there is this coexistence. And you can see that coexistence in his Bitcoin 24 model. And what it is he tapers off growth at some point. I forgot where, but maybe after the 2030s. And then it's just kind of Bitcoin growth just stabilizes. And I think the assumption there is that it just coexists with the dollar indefinitely.
Yeah, which is, you know, and I'm a fan of Michael Saylor. We talk about his ideas on the show. But this is definitely one part where I feel a personal divergence, because that model just, it doesn't make sense to me how it sort of ignores a lot of different rules about how different calibers of money work in competition with each other, about how networks work, adoption of better technology. I was really a week or two ago, I heard a safety analogy talking about how we used to make phone calls and you would be connected to the other phone using an operator. And then as soon as we were able to connect to each other by phoning each other's phones directly, there was no point to use an operator. You know, and it's like that. You know, it's not just better money, but it's a technological improvement to the way money works, which, you know, I think when you put those two things together, it's hard to see a scenario where people by choice would continue to use something that was less advantageous for the users. So you've used this term before Bitcoin and after Satoshi. Maybe can I just bug you for your thoughts on like the significance of Bitcoin as an invention, and you know, how big of an idea is this?
Well, I think it's a massive idea, and the abbreviations I picked were actually before Bitcoin and Anno Singulari, and then some people said you can also say it's after Satoshi. Both work, I think. But the reason I chose Anno Singulari is that it's like one Latin translation of a sovereign individual. And I think Satoshi, above all else, was a sovereign individual, you know, beholden to no one, and no one can control him, manipulate him, and coerce him. And he gave us this gift of being capable of also being sovereign without having to give up and, you know, give up our identities, right? So with the advent of Bitcoin, the reason why I think it's so significant is you can actually have your own money now versus the old system where there is an intermediary at all touch points. And even with metal-based monies like gold and silver, you have a minter of coins, and powers will centralize and control that process. You know, even when gold coins were prolific, you know, at some point it became illegal to mint your own coins, right? There is the mint, and that is the group that gets to mint the coins. And of course, when you centralize power and control, they become corrupted and they start clipping and, mixing with other stuff. So with Bitcoin, you get rid of all these deficiencies in every single other monetary system that has ever been created in humanity. And it's such a base transformation of civilization. I think it warrants this new year scheme or calendar schema, because it just resets everything. So if you think about it, we always make new things and we do them in a poor way, right? So the internet, one of the key deficiencies that I think we had was it wasn't encrypted by default, right? It's not secure by default. And we have to bolt on all these things, but the net effect is like internet is still not that secure these days. There's all these holes. And if you're not familiar or understand all the safety procedures or how to use it safely, then you can leak your information or leak whatever metadata about yourself too. But it's the same for money. It's all defective. And then suddenly we create this perfect money that fixes all those deficiencies. So I think it's an important milestone in terms of human civilization.
Yeah, there is no going back. So you're involved in a lot of discussions internationally, and without speculating on what countries may follow El Salvador, are you surprised that there has been this long in between El Salvador's announcement and whoever's coming next? Or is that, again, like there was really no way to know?
Well, I think there was a certain momentum that could have been taken advantage of once El Salvador announced, and we tried to push that hard. But at the same time, you're fighting inertia. So governments are typically not early adopters, right? Like, far from it, to put it politely. So you're dealing with very difficult to orange pill entities. And one of the things that was a miracle for El Salvador really was that they had a president that was a Bitcoiner, right? That's not the norm right now in most countries. I mean, you can argue about Trump, but he's more crypto than a Bitcoiner. Pierre Poilievre in Canada, he knows about Bitcoin, and I think he appreciates and understands Bitcoin, but he hasn't spoken much about Bitcoin in the past couple of years, actually. So it's a question mark on finding countries that have administrations or heads of state that understand it, and then getting them across the line to do something with it. So that's been a challenge, I think, and that's been slower than I had hoped. But at the same time, I feel it's accelerating again now because of the US. So a lot of countries look towards the US for leadership in many areas, and the ETFs are one such example. So Hong Kong and Australia, they didn't launch their ETFs until the SEC greenlit in the US, and then they went ahead with it. So I think if the Trump administration does create this strategic Bitcoin reserve that they're tabling and discussing and pushing for, then we'll start to see a massive cascade that more and more countries around the world are actually doing things. And you start to see a bit of this with the state level adoption of Bitcoin as reserve asset, and other countries starting to talk about it now too. So it's all starting to really snowball.
Totally. We're recording this in the last week of November. It was a big week. I think it's the city of Vancouver, Brazil, state of Pennsylvania, Rumble, there was a bunch. And this is one aspect that seems to be really catching fire right now. And I'm also, just personally, it seems so, I think so, also in the last week or two, maybe 2 weeks, MicroStrategy has bought over 100,000 more Bitcoin. And like no other company has really, I mean, there are companies holding Bitcoin on their balance sheet, but no one has really thought about emulating this strategy to anywhere near the scale that MicroStrategy is doing. What are your thoughts about that? What has prevented another, there are plenty of companies as capitalized as MicroStrategy. What's the holdup there?
We're seeing more now. You have Semler Scientific and a number of others starting to come out. And like you mentioned, Rumble too. So it is happening. I think MicroStrategy and Michael Saylor, they just have such a huge lead that it'll be difficult for any company to replicate that success with Bitcoin, because they just started at a point where nobody was doing it and they were able to buy a lot of Bitcoin at very low prices. So I think more companies will be adopting Bitcoin as a reserve asset, because a lot of companies have cash flow and excess cash that is melting. So they will pick it up, but will another one reach MicroStrategy size? that's a really debatable point. It's even questionable whether the US can hit that 1 million coin target that they have, that Cynthia Lummis had in her, through her bill to create that reserve. So I think definitely we're reaching the end of 2024 now, but 2025 is going to be the year of war to accumulate Bitcoin. Everyone's going to be trying to get it. You have nation states that are mining it and kept quiet a very long time and not told anybody because, of course, they want the advantage. But you're going to see more of that, more nation states just mining with excess energy that they have that would otherwise, you know, turn to mush and be wasted. And you're going to have countries printing their own currency to buy it, I believe, because they see that there's no downside to it, right? You either print it to do useless things that add zero value, or you print it to buy Bitcoin. So just print it to buy Bitcoin. And then you're going to have public entities like the US and MicroStrategy rapidly accumulating. So there's just going to be all out war to get your hands on a single Satoshi.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on, like, how does it work then as adoption continues, or your ideas around as more holders of Bitcoin become entities like megacorps and nation states, and they're buying it to keep it. So as the, you know, what does that do for Bitcoin's ability to be a form of money that's being also exchanged by people to be used as money?
Well, I don't think they'll be able to get all of the Bitcoin. There will still be Bitcoin in circulation. And I've theorized before that we might see a bifurcation of Bitcoin into institutional Bitcoin and free Bitcoin. So institutional Bitcoin is Bitcoin that's locked up in BlackRock's coffers, MicroStrategy, government holdings, but you'll still have, you know, free Bitcoin that's circulating in economies around the world, being used to pay for things and being used as cash, as money. The question mark is, will this happen, or will there still be a bridge between these two buckets of Bitcoin? And we've seen this can go either way, I would say. We've seen initiatives in the EU to limit transfer from one VASP to another VASP. So you could easily extend that rationale and say, you know, ETFs can only send to other ETFs, you know, even when you sell. And, you know, that will cause two prices of Bitcoin, one price for institutional Bitcoin and another price for free Bitcoin. And I hope that doesn't happen, but, you know, obviously the free Bitcoin will win at the end of the day because you can do anything you want with it. The other one is going to be heavily encumbered with different rules and different conditions on which it can be used and accessed. So yeah, we'll see what happens, but definitely I think you'll always have Bitcoin usable as money so long as, you know, anybody can mine Bitcoin and transact in Bitcoin.
You have some interesting ideas about where this could go with MicroStrategy in particular. You recently tweeted that you thought it might end up being a nation state of its own one day.
Well, that's a little joke, I guess, but now it's looking more and more likely. But yeah, I mean, if you think about it, eventually space travel could be largely done by private companies like SpaceX, and settling other planets or creating other settlements in the star system could be private endeavors. And if you have enough of that, then these companies effectively eventually evolve into nation states of their own, because they get large enough and they have to implement some forms of governance and administration for their population. So I think it's very likely that very well-capitalized corporations can eventually evolve into sort of nation states of the future.
Yeah, that's like the Wayland Corp from the Alien prequel trilogies. So then what are your thoughts around as this we move through this money transition process? Like, what does that mean for the nation states that are currently nation states?
We'll see. I think the nation states that adopt Bitcoin early on will continue to be nation states. And then the other ones are going to maybe cease existing because they don't have money, because money is what makes the world go around. Many people like to deny that fact, but it is all about the money. And the countries that can accrue wealth and keep it and attract new wealth are the ones that are going to succeed on longer time horizons. And you already see this in, say, Europe, right? Switzerland is very much a country that understands money and wants money to come in. The rest of Europe seems to not like money, and they want to control it and monitor it and regulate it. And that's not going so well for them, at all. And not just money, but everything else. Their tech industry is gutted. But you can see this sort of trend happening where countries that are seeking growth are looking towards Bitcoin or deregulating money. So examples, again, El Salvador, but also more importantly, Argentina. So Milei has effectively deregulated money in possibly steps towards his goal to shut down the central bank. But you can use anything you want for trade settlement. You can use Bitcoin, you can use dollars, you can use cows or stable coins, whatever you choose. So he's opened that door now. And I think that combined with his other policies has largely lifted Argentina out of the death spiral that it was in. So countries like Canada are definitely not on that path yet. We're still focused on things like carbon tax, even though we're probably a carbon negative country. Not that I think carbon matters that much. It's methane that is doing anything, if anything. But, you know, Western countries by and large are focused on, I don't even know how to explain it, just doing random things that have no effect on their economy or the world. It's just busy work. And other countries are trying to lift themselves out of poverty, grow their economy, and become magnets for innovation and migration and capital. So that's the battle for the next few decades. The countries that align with Bitcoin and the ones that reject Bitcoin. And I strongly believe the ones that reject Bitcoin are going to end up as failed states.
Yep, I agree. You mentioned countries sort of secretly hiding their Bitcoin mining operations. And you have the sense that a lot of countries, maybe all of them, are a lot more in the know than the average, you know, the general perception. There's a few things going on with money in general that I would like to sort of ask you your opinion about. And on the one side of, on the U.S. side, Trump is talking about tariffs on the BRICS countries if they make their own currency. Of 100%, they've announced an intention to impose tariffs on Canada and Mexico that look pretty steep. On the other side, there is this continual whispers about BRICS creating a currency to compete with the dollar and backing it by commodities, which is just something another thing I've really struggled to figure out, how China and Russia certainly have a lot of exposure and understanding of Bitcoin, which would be an obvious solution to the problem of trying to come up with a money the four of those countries could use together. That's a lot of a broad scope of topics. But so you have the BRICS countries on one end, and you have Trump and sort of his own deregulation of money or regulation of money. And how would you care to characterize everything that's going on there?
Yeah, it's a mess. Let me think. Well, let's unpack this bit by bit. So I don't think tariffs are good, nor that they will work, because ultimately those costs are passed back down through the food chain. So you can impose tariffs, but that doesn't really change anything. And the US needs a lot of things, especially from China. So that's actually detrimental, I would say. I just don't think that's going to work. I don't think Department of Government Efficiency is going to work. Tariffs are not going to work. It's going to be the Bitcoin reserve, if they do that, that saves America and embracing sound money. The BRIC stuff, I mean, the challenge there is that they want control over that money still. It's just, instead of control by one country, it's kind of controlled by, you know, the BRICS leaders. But you can't have that, especially not in the age of Bitcoin or Anu Singulari or after Satoshi. It's not possible anymore because everything is going to be inferior to Bitcoin. So they'll try to launch it and they'll fail and they'll go to Bitcoin. So the really big question is really what is the interplay of U.S. adoption of Bitcoin versus failure of a BRICS currency? Because I don't think that those BRICS countries will adopt Bitcoin as money. I don't think they see it. I don't think the leadership sees it. And they are still wound up on control. Like if you look at who the BRICS countries are, they obviously like control, right? So they're not going to just walk in accept Bitcoin. So I see it kind of like, you know, both sides don't really know what they're doing. But the U.S., if they do their strategic Bitcoin reserve, will probably come on top and win because they accidentally understood sound money.
Yeah, it's going to be, like I said, it's shaping up to be a very interesting year or two. I think the Kennedy speech at the Bitcoin conference in Nashville this summer was kind of like, we'll be remembered as a watershed moment in Western political history for sure, just for to have somebody of that stature putting those kinds of ideas out into the mainstream like that is, it's like a genie out of the bottle, an intellectual kind of genie out of the bottle.
And don't get me wrong, there are quite a few politicians in the U.S. that seem to get it and get it at a very deep level. Cynthia Lummis definitely is one of those. Bobby is another one. But the challenge is, you know, how does that entire piece of machinery move and react and adjust relative to everyone else? And I don't know. It's hard to say what's going to exactly happen. But I think if I had to flip a coin, I would say, you know, the U.S. is probably going to come out on top because they have Bitcoin. And if you look at it, the U.S. has a massive concentration of Bitcoin overall. They've got the ETFs with, you know, more than a million coins now. You have MicroStrategy with another large chunk of coins. So I think the future is relatively secured for America. There's just no other country that has even close to them the amount of Bitcoin a nation state should have.
You mentioned that it might be difficult for the United States to accumulate the 1 million Bitcoin that Senator Lummis had articulated in her proposal. And then, as you've just stated, there is already more than a million Bitcoin in the United States. Of course, there was the 6102 event that happened, I think, in 1933, where they making personal holdings of gold illegal. What do you place the likelihood of acquiring a strategic Bitcoin reserve not by buying Bitcoin?
It's also likely, I would say. But this is why I think self-custody and having your own keys is so important. Maybe you want to buy MicroStrategy for trading and playing the markets like you would normal stocks. That's okay. But you should always have your own Bitcoin because that is your insurance against 6102. And I think you have to, as a Bitcoiner, expect that 6102 is going to happen somehow. There's always going to be a very important reason to seize coins or, you know, effectively stop you from using them, right? And if you look at 6102, it was not technically, definitionally seizure. They just kind of said, well, if you do anything that, if you don't give it up, you're going to be in trouble with potential jail time and whatnot. And you see this kind of soft coercion recently with the COVID, right? Like, well, varying, there were definitely people arrested for not complying, but by and large, the control over the population was soft coercion, you know, and peer pressure and Karens and, you know, ratting on everyone else that's not doing what they're supposed to do. So you can see the same thing possibly happening with the institutional Bitcoin, the Bitcoin that's, you know, in ETFs and in corporations. But I think there's always a defense to that, which is people have their own Bitcoin. And if they can move, then Bitcoin will survive because they'll move and they'll walk across the border and know 12 words and bring their life savings with them.
Yeah, I was in El Salvador recently for the Adopting Bitcoin conference, and it was very interesting to see the number of people who have already sort of made that choice and relocated with their 12 words in their head, and got me thinking about how even, you know, legacy things like when the border agent asks you if you're carrying more than $10,000 in cash, and how you even you know, properly disclose that if you even care. But that was very interesting.
This is why we're doing what we're doing at Gen 3, engaging with governments, because I think as part of Bitcoin adoption around the world, we need to start preparing or correcting legislation. And this is one thing I'll give Elon Musk a hat tip to, right? He's trying to put expiry dates on laws and simplify the entire legal system, codified laws out there. Because a lot of this stuff can be used against people, and there are not really laws that protect you, right? So let's say you just happen to be carrying your seed in your pocket and a police officer stops you and he looks at it, right? What's to stop him from either memorizing it or taking a photo of it and your money is gone, right? So there's a ton of things that need to be put into place to protect people in this age of Bitcoin or after Satoshi, because with the advent of Bitcoin, money is just information now. And yes, information is very porous. We can memorize it. We can send it in email or encrypted chat message or put it on a USB stick or broadcast it through radio waves. All these things are possible. But at the same time, we need better protections as individuals so that this information can't just be taken from you either by force or by accident. So there needs to be a higher degree of care when interacting with people now, because a lot of these actions that were deemed okay in the past are definitely irrevocably destructive now, such as, like, you've heard stories like crossing a border, they want you to unlock your phone, right? What's to prevent a corrupt border officer from stealing your coins, right? Nothing. So there has to be a lot of changes, I would say, that are needed for society to function in this anno singulari era.
What are your thoughts around the role potentially of, you know, sort of institutional Bitcoin custody products that let people interact with Bitcoin in without being in possession of it? Like, what is the future end state of all this in your mind? Everyone in full custody of their own Bitcoin, or is there somewhere in the middle?
Well, I think it's a mix. You can have multi-sig systems where you don't have control at all times. You could have other parties that can sign on your behalf when you follow a specific procedure. I think some of these things have yet to be developed, but you know, Blockstream Green has been pioneering some of this. So they have the multi-sig shield, which is you use a two-factor and then the Blockstream server signs when you give the right two-factor, either by SMS or email or using a SMS app. Authentication app. So these things are yet to be fully fleshed out, I think, but some mixture of that plus your own self-sovereign keys and storage, probably with a multi-sig, is the way forward.
You have been also another one of your sort of like common things is an understanding that like we're probably going to start to see gaps in Bitcoin's acceleration of price appreciation. Something that you call Omega Candle. Maybe just what is the Omega Candle idea and why does it hold water?
Well, the Omega Candle is just a $100,000 candle in one day. We've kind of had traders posterizing the God Candle, which is a $10,000 candle, a green candle. Both are green. A $10,000 green candle on the daily or in one day. So the Omega Candle is just a larger movement in terms of Bitcoin price. And I think the reason why I was creating it was kind of also to prime people for the concept of $1 million Bitcoin. Just like with M notation, the world's going to change. After 100,000, I think everything starts to accelerate and go faster. So, you know, post 100,000, we're not going to be watching $500 candles. Like 1,000 is already kind of normal in one day in terms of volatility. And I think the next step from that is 10,000 and 100,000. We almost had a God candle, I think, a couple of weeks ago. I think we got up to 9,000 sort of on the day. But 100,000 is the next step once we start to go well into the higher ranges of Bitcoin. But it just goes to show like the fiat system does not really make sense anymore because, you know, an Omega candle is nothing in terms of fiat money. Like the debt increases by a couple Omega candles every day, if not like many, many, many Omega candles each day. But no one blinks an eye for that, right? So again, like I told you, there's this disconnect between the fiat monetary system that's normalized, that it's growing very fast and at ridiculous rates, but that's normal. But when you talk about Bitcoin, people are like, oh, well, that's crazy. It's not at all. So yeah, the Omega candle is just a big movement in Bitcoin price. And the interesting thing is we already see Omega candles in countries with weaker fiat currencies, Egypt, Turkey, Argentina, even. It's normal. Omega candles every day.
Yeah, it's. I love to look at the different, how the charts look when they're priced in different pieces of paper. And yeah, it's almost maybe like looking into the future for some of the less badly performing fiat currencies like the ones we have in the Western world.
Yeah, it's definitely a foreshadowing of what's to come. All fiat currencies will end up like that. It's just a matter of time. And the US dollar is the reserve currency. A lot of debt is still priced in dollars, so it definitely has more legs. But if you look at the purchasing power of a dollar over the last 100 years, it's effectively gone to zero. But it happens gradually enough that people just don't feel it. So it's okay, I guess. But that's the destiny. Just like the destiny of altcoins is to go to zero too. You know, they have one big run up and then they drop. And then they have a second run up and then they fade away into obscurity.
Yeah, I was looking at the list of altcoins that have ever made priced in Bitcoin gain against Bitcoin. And it's like, I don't know. The number is minuscule of the tens of thousands of altcoins there are, like the likelihood of someone finding the one that does, and then actually maybe selling it in time to realize whatever headway they've made. It's a losing game. Any I guess final thoughts, Samson, for what maybe where you think this is going to be a year from now, or something that you're most interested or excited about in the space?
I don't know. A year from now, I would think we're above 1 million a Bitcoin, but everything is exciting. I think for us and myself personally at Gen 3, we're excited to onboard the next billion people to Bitcoin. I think a lot of Bitcoin companies and wallets have not really made much progress on advancing Bitcoin adoption in a meaningful way. Everyone's focused on making a cool wallet with very cool tech, but nobody's really focused on onboarding people that want to get into Bitcoin or don't know about Bitcoin. There's just no wallet for that yet. And that's really what we're trying to do. So, you could say it's our marketing slogan to onboard the next billion people, but that is actually the mission for Gen 3. And we have some really cool stuff coming out in the next year that's going to start making that a reality.
Cool. Anything that you can tease, or is it completely in the black box for now?
It's completely in the black box, but I'll let you know as soon as we have news.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, Samson. It's been a real treat, and appreciate you making the time.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. It's been fun.
And if you're listening and you made it to the end of the show, I want to thank you as well for tuning in, and hope to see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. BlockRewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies, and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Special thanks to our top sponsor, Paramount Employee Benefits Consulting, Canada's only Bitcoin-forward benefits and pension advisory. For more information, find them at paramountbenefits.ca. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.